All right, this is case number 60085, Brigade Leveraged Capital Structures Fund LLC versus Union Labor Life Insurance Company. Are you ready to proceed, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Right. Well, let's see if the attorneys can argue this case so that the Boy Scouts can understand it. Because if they understand it, maybe my colleagues and I will understand it.
I'm going to do my best, but that's a tough crowd, Your Honor. Your Honor, may it please the court, my name is Kirk Dillman. I'm here representing the plaintiffs and the appellants in this matter. We have a different record here than the last two matters. We do not have a trial record for the court to consider. I don't have any blow-ups, although I do like blow-ups. We have a much simpler matter and a simpler people. We are here from an order of the district court dismissing, with prejudice, on the original complaints in this matter, claims against Union Labor Life Insurance Company, which we've referred to as ULICO, for fraud, negligent misrepresentation, conspiracy, and aiding and abetting, arising out of the financing and the ultimate collapse, financial collapse, of the Las Vegas Fontainebleau Resort and Casino. This court indicated in its order setting this up that it would find oral argument to be of assistance. It is my goal here to be of assistance, and I would like to address any issues that the court has. However, pending that, as an overview, we have three reasons why we believe that the district
Before
court...
you do that,
yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, I think one of the things that would be of assistance to the panel, these financing agreements tend to be a little complicated.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I think it would be helpful if you and your colleague, if he feels that there are some omissions on your part or changes, could give an overview of this financing agreement so that we have a framework within which to assess the claims you then made against ULICO.
Absolutely, Your Honor. They are complex. They come in wheelbarrows. They are drafted by people who we hope will spend eternity having to interpret them and understand them. But these agreements are, for the purposes of this hearing, in three main buckets. There is the main financing agreement, which we have that governed about $1.865 billion of financing to the Fontainebleau Resorts. My clients were term lenders under that agreement, lent approximately $800 million of those funds. My client's money was the first money into the project. There was a revolving facility as well. That didn't come online until later, never came online because of the collapse of the project. There was as well the retail facility. The retail facility provided financing for the retail portion of this large casino and resort. The retail facility included a number of lenders, one of which was ULICO. These facilities were joined both in terms of the overall project that they were contributing to produce or to finance, were joined also by what's called a disbursement agreement. And the disbursement agreement was the document that B of A as disbursement agent oversaw in disbursing funds from the various financings to the developers for use in paying subcontractors and so on for the project. So the money, although it went into the project, had the guarantee or the safety that there was this disbursement agreement in place, and unless all of the conditions preceding to disbursement were met, our agent, Bank of America, had no choice but to refuse to fund. And it is our contention that, it's not our contention, Section 3.23 of the disbursement agreement required that the retail lenders, capital R, capital L, fund all of their commitments under the retail facility as a condition precedent to the disbursement of any of my clients' funds. The retail lenders included ULICO. They did not include the developers. The developers, as the court is aware, were the ones that when Lehman went bankrupt, Lehman was also a retail lender, the developers sought to fund Lehman's shortfall. Because if Lehman wasn't funded, if that slice of the financing collapsed, then the whole, because of the intricate structure and interrelationship between these agreements, the whole project financing collapsed.
That was just a limited number of fundings, though, wasn't it, for a short period of time?
Your Honor, let me go back for a moment. Lehman, as we all remember, filed for bankruptcy in September 2007. In September 2007, there were some events that are the subject of another action involving B of A. We have not been successful thus far in that action, but there are some allegations that have to do with whether or not we were judicially estopped, and we can get there if we need to. In December of 2008, Lehman continued to fund for October, November, and then indicated that it would no longer fund in December. None of the retail lenders were prepared to step in and take over Lehman's position. That's the requirement of these financings, because if you have a hole in the financing, if someone just says, we'll step in and we'll pay for this month, it doesn't really solve my problem as a lender that I need to make sure that this project gets to the end in order for me to continue and be willing to fund into it. And that's why the disbursement agreement was structured the way it was, to give people like my clients who were first money in the comfort that there was going to be the financing there to get this to completion. And if it wasn't going to be there, if there was a question about that, stop it. And now we can decide what to do. We can decide whether we're going to throw it into bankruptcy, get additional financing, whatever. But we're not going to keep pouring out what was hundreds, literally, almost $500 million of my client's money from the time that Umicore stepped up and purported to step into and pay Lehman's obligations. Now, as the court knows from our complaint, that's not exactly what happened. While Umicore said that it was paying, while it issued wires claiming to be paying Lehman's portion, what was actually going on behind the scenes was that the developer, Fountain Blue Resorts, the contractor, Turnberry West Construction, and Jeffrey Sofer, the principal, had gone to Umicore and had said, look, we'd like you to front payments for us of Lehman's share. So we'll enter into this complicated set of guarantees and so on. And when we wash through it all, and this is what it was a wash, what will the substance be? The developers will have paid Lehman's share, which we're not entitled to do under the agreement. You will front that money, make it appear as if you had paid it, and therefore bless this transaction. And we will get to go forward with continuing to get the financing, my client's money. We will get to go forward and continue to build the project, your 3,000 union members who are out there, and let's see how it goes. Umicore certainly had an incentive to make sure that this project got completed. It had invested in it. It was not desirous of there being of having the project collapse. So Umicore stepped up and it did this for December, January, February, March. Almost $500 million of my client's money went into this at the time. Lehman's portion was on the order of $10 million. A much smaller, leverage point in order to extract a whole heck of a lot of money from my clients. At the end of March, the fraud became, shall we say, a little more apparent. And by April, in mid-April, the fraud was fairly well known. The financing stopped. The lenders declared a default on the developers. This is not involving Umicore. And the project, shortly thereafter, went into bankruptcy. Approximately $2.4 billion was put into this project. It sold in the bankruptcy to Icon for $105 million, and we are told that he intends to scrap it. It's a 60-story steel carcass at the north end of the strip, and he intends to tear this thing down for scrap value and hopefully ride out the economic conditions and rebuild at some point in the future. That's the background of the agreements and the underlying facts, which, obviously this is a motion to dismiss. We brought the complaint essentially laying out the story that I just told with respect to Umicore. There's a great deal more. The fraud that occurred here is outrageous. We don't contend that Umicore was part of the underlying double set of books, hidden change orders, those sorts of things. They weren't part of that. But they did stick their nose under that tent and get involved with this scheme that they got involved with. Judge?
As part of that, is that just these payments that they made? And my understanding was pursuant to a guarantee,
agreement with the fountain?
Well, Your Honor, that the guarantee agreement was how the basically the fronting occurred.
Okay.
You would go make the payments, wrote the check, so to speak. And over here, then, took the money from the developer in payment for that. It was a series of guarantees. So ULICO fronted the money. The next month, Fountain Blue Resorts, Jeffrey Sofer, Turnberry, the three, repaid that. ULICO fronted it. Next month, they repaid that. In the meantime, in order to secure that obligation to repay, there were these guarantee agreements that were securitized or collateralized. The district court issued an opinion, which I will confess to have been a bit flummoxed when I read it. I've read it many times since. I see it the same way. It certainly appears that what the court ruled was that judicial estoppel, judicial admissions, contributory negligence, somewhere in that mix of issues involving allegations that we made against B of A, was the basis for the court's decision. It's apparent that from the one paragraph that the court wrote, that interplay formed the crux and, in fact, the only issues discussed, which immediately were followed by, therefore, the court will dismiss the action as against ULICO in its entirety with prejudice and will certify finality pursuant to NRCP 54B. We went through in our initial brief and we explained why judicial estoppel, admission, whatever the court was pointing to here didn't apply here. The allegations weren't inconsistent, and certainly we haven't been successful against B of A.
Was the judge's decision based on the fact that he felt that your client knew what ULICO was doing? Is that the bottom line of this, that you knew what was happening about the money being fronted by Fountain Blue to you after ULICO, that the money was fronted by ULICO and paid back by Fountain Blue?
It feels that way to me, although they didn't say that exactly, but that's what it feels like, and obviously there's no evidence. We didn't allege that, not surprisingly. So what I think the court did was to say, you've alleged that Bank of America was your agent with respect to the disbursement agreement. You've alleged that in September, Bank of America uncovered this other kind of shenanigans that the borrower was undergoing to try and pay Lehman's share. Okay. We by the way, made those allegations and we haven't been successful with them. The summary judgment was granted against us in Florida. So the first step of you have to have successfully pursued the allegation is gone. But what happened in September has nothing to do with December, because for October and November of 2007, Lehman Brothers paid. I don't know why. I don't know why they didn't pay in September and why they sort of snuck around with the developers. But it was in December that Lehman, again, said it wasn't going to pay. And that's when this wholly separate set of issues with ULICO came into play. Now, were we supposed to ferret out oh, you know what? There's probably something going on here because we've seen that they did that before. Paren, we lost on that we've seen part. Sorry. No, that's not really fairly a burden that can be put on us at the pleading stage to somehow refute that argument and the cases that they cite establish that argument that there were red flags and so on. It's a factual issue.
I don't want to oversimplify all of these many agreements, but is your claim essentially that as a condition precedent to your funding your share of the loan, you're depending upon certifications that are being made in the retail facility funding, and that those certifications were in effect false?
Yes, but not all. Absolutely, we are asserting that. And that's the claim against the Fountain Blue Resorts and so forth. Their direct misrepresentations occurred in those draw requests, which were provided monthly, that had just that, those representations that all conditions preceding had been satisfied. That's one set of misrepresentations. So the other is the act of payment by ULICO, in which they... Implicit in that is the representation that we are paying Lehman Brothers' share. That's an independent misrepresentation that they made that's part of this overall scheme. Now, can we separate that out and say, misrepresentation, it certainly was aiding and abetting. It certainly was a part of a substantial participation that they...
The claim against Ulico is either civil conspiracy or aiding and abetting in Fountain Blue's false certification.
Yes, but there's more. It is, the claims against Ulico are threefold. Fraud. You made misrepresentations that our agents relied upon. And as a result of that, we, may I continue, Your Honor?
Yes.
As a result of that, we funded from the date of those misrepresentations until the project collapsed to half a billion dollars. We have a claim against them as well for negligent misrepresentation. These representations that you made, let's assume that you claim that you didn't do it with, you know, malice and so on. You didn't do it with the scienter that would hold you up to a fraud claim. You certainly did it negligently in terms of what you knew to be the bundle of obligations and rights that all the parties had under these interlocking agreements. Three, and you conspired and aided and abetted the true bad guys here, the developers of the project. They're the ones that committed the fraud that overstated the budget in this project by hundreds of millions of dollars. They're the reason the project collapsed. We don't hold that all on Ulico, but they certainly were involved.
Which of the three agreements provides or contains a provision that precludes Fountain Blue from covering, so to speak, the obligations of one of the co-lenders?
It is the disbursement agreement, Your Honor. It requires as a condition precedent, there is in Section 3.3, thank you, of the disbursement agreement, there's a set of conditions precedent that must be met before any funds can be disbursed. 3.3.23 of the disbursement agreement requires that the retail lenders have funded their commitments under the agreement. And I apologize.
I have that provision in front of me, but I don't see a provision, and I was asking you to direct me to it, that precludes Fountain Blue from making the payments that Lehman was otherwise obligated to make.
Well, Your Honor, and I let me get the entire provision, although I've got it excerpted here. 3.3.23 says that the retail, cutting out a lot, obviously, the retail lenders, that's a capital R, capital L term, that's defined to be those lenders under the retail facility. The retail lenders shall, not may, not somebody else, but shall, on the date specified in the relevant advance requests, these are the requests for the certifications that Your Honor alluded to, shall make any advances required of them pursuant to the advance request. Now, I suspect we'll have robust argument at the time of the when this matter proceeds, and perhaps on summary judgment, and after we've conducted discovery on the whether or not Ulico could step into the shoes of Lehman. I don't think we're going to have any argument whatsoever that somehow Fountain Blue Resorts, who is not a capital R, capital L retail lender, has any ability to step in here. And that, those set of joining of issues, we would submit is a matter that needs to be done on a full record. We have done no discovery with respect to these particular issues in this case because Ulico got out on the first complaint on a motion to dismiss with prejudice. So,
okay.
Your Honor, I've run way over my time. I'd like to continue addressing any questions the court has. I want to be respectful of my time at this podium, though, and not abuse my rights.
Well, I think I'll give you some additional time after we've heard from your opponent. That may help generate some additional questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. What I haven't addressed is just sort of gunny sacking it. is the arguments that the that ULICO's counsel have made regarding whether we have alleged misrepresentation, reliance, and duty. I'm prepared to address those. I will note that the district court denied the motions of all of the other parties who would have been named in these counts, and therefore found certainly that there was a misrepresentation, necessarily found that there was a misrepresentation alleged, that there was reliance alleged. ULICO's duty, we have said, is a matter of it's not speaking the full truth. And I have not addressed the issues of whether it was appropriate to dismiss this matter in the first instance with prejudice on this first complaint. So those are issues that I...
We have your briefs on that.
Yes,
I'll give you 3 minutes to for rebuttal, and I'll add 3 minutes to your time, counsel. If you'd like to proceed on behalf of ULICO.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Bill Harvey. I'm here today with Charles McCray. We stand on behalf of the Union Labor Life Insurance Company. ULICO is a Taft-Hartley creation. It collects the funds of working men and women around the country and invests them, presumably and usually, in projects that aggregate and are accretive to work and providing a stable lifestyle for the folks that it represents. I'm always humbled when I speak after Mr. Dillman because of his powerful advocacy, and he's a good friend of mine, but I think he misspoke on a couple of very important points to the court today. First of all, on a minor point, the Lehman bankruptcy, as we all know, was in September of 08, not in September of 07. We all lived through the chaos of the summer and fall of 2008, wondering if Bank of America and Citibank and Wells and other brand name financial institutions were going to go the way of Lehman. But more significantly, he misspoke on a very critical point in terms of his presentation to the court today. Mr. Dillman told you that Lehman Brothers funded its portion of the retail facility in September and October, November of 2008. Well, that is simply not true, as we all know, and as Mr. Dillman, in his complaint, avers in paragraph 137, in which he says, in September of 2008, the FRB defendants, and that's the developer here, caused FBR to pay Lehman's portion of the September 2008 draw request under the retail facility. Defendants knew the payment of Lehman's portion of the draw request by FBR would highlight the funding gap created by Lehman's bankruptcy and increase the likelihood that Lehman would refuse continued funding. Accordingly, although Freeman, one of the officers of the developer, advised B of A that FBR had funded Lehman's portion, okay, this and they and other FBR defendants took steps to ensure the documents filed publicly during that period did not disclose that. So it's very clear that for September and October and November, the developer, the borrower, under the credit facility that Mr. Dillman's clients are participants in, the developer funded that, and they knew that. And they knew that because the developer told them that. And the proof we have of that is the paragraph of the complaint, paragraph 137, which specifically states that. So just to make that record clear, Lehman stopped funding when they filed bankruptcy. The developer stepped in, as it had the right to do, to fund Lehman's portion, not of the retail facility, but of the credit facility, the main credit facility that Mr. Dillman's clients were a part of. And the developer paid September, October, November.
See, factually, I guess I missed that because I thought FBR funded September, but then Lehman came back in October and November and funded their share and then quit funding again in December.
Yeah, I think there is...
Actually, I'm just confused.
There is some ambiguity in the record with respect to that because Lehman did not fund in September and then expressed some willingness. I'm only going by the well-pleaded allegations of the complaint as opposed to what other documents and other cases have revealed to the parties, Your Honor. More significantly, remember that my client, ULICO, was not a party to that credit agreement. It was a stranger to that credit agreement. The retail facility had a different borrower, not the same borrower as Mr. Dillman's client's borrower, okay, had a completely different group of lenders. None of the lenders in the retail facility were lenders in the main facility. And my client, Ulico, had a credit agreement with those other retail lenders. Sumitomo Bank, National City Bank, out of Cleveland, Lehman Brothers, and Ulico, the four lenders in that group. And their agreement provided, contractually, that in the event that a defaulting lender failed to fund, okay, that the other lenders have the ability to step in and fund. And that's exactly what Ulico did, okay, in commencing in December of 2008 for 4 months, December, January, February of March 2009, okay, at which time, as Mr. Dillman indicated quite accurately, for other macroeconomic reasons, the project started to deteriorate. It became clear that the market was going in a different direction, and all funding was withdrawn from the job. But most significantly, and probably the best example I could think of no good deed goes unpunished, Ulico, unlike many lenders during this time, who were using the economic chaos of the summer and fall of 2008 to withdraw from credit agreements and to from stop funding things that they were contractually obligated to fund, Ulico steps up to the boat, okay, and funds for 4 months, okay, with a guarantee, with an agreement that someday hopefully they get reimbursed by their borrower, okay. We acknowledge that, but they made at-risk funding of Lehman's portion along with their own. So there's no allegation anywhere in the four corners of the complaint that Judge Denton looked at, okay, in the lower court, in which there's any allegation that Ulico signed some false certification or violated the disbursement agreement or in any way misled anybody. There's not a single sentence in this very long complaint in which there's any allegation that any certification Ulico ever gave was wrong. This case is about what counsel says he didn't get to in his presentation. It's about an omission. They're claiming that Ulico, a stranger to their credit agreement and their transaction, had an affirmative obligation to jump up and say, hold it. None of you should take any comfort or solace in the knowledge that we Ulico, are funding Lehman's portion of this loan. Now, I would suggest to you that there's nothing special about Mr. Dillman's clients, who are a very large group of offshore Cayman hedge funds who were the assignees of this debt. Nothing special about them. If that argument is true, if somehow Ulico funding these 4 months of Lehman's portion of the retail facility, if that's wrong or misleading by our silence, then we've misled many, many constituents of creditors. We've misled, you know, the concrete guy, the steel guy, and the contractors at the site. And we've misled the material men and the laborers who showed up at that site. Make no mistake, what Mr. Dillman is suggesting to you, that absent some affirmative statement by us as to what we were doing, that the ambit and universe of potential plaintiffs who could come after us is very, very large. Not limited to his client.
Mr. Harvey, may I interrupt you at this point? Do you agree with your colleague, your opponent, I should say, that Fontainebleau could not make the payment for one of the retail lenders who had defaulted under the retail instrument?
No, I do not agree with that. Okay, I think that in any way that the retail borrower, okay, our borrower in the retail facility, anything that borrower could have done to provide credit enhancements or induce any of those lenders, including Lehman Brothers, to continue to fund in that chaotic time, they were permitted to do. Recognize here two things.
And let me ask my next question.
Please.
Does the retail instrument contain a provision that allows the various participants in the retail instrument to cover shortfalls that are created by members of that instrument who don't pay their share?
Specifically, it does. And it's in the record in the appendix, yes. A defaulting lender.
Is it in your brief?
It is in the brief, yes.
Okay. All right. And can you help me with the paragraph number of the retail instrument?
Yes, I'm going to have my colleague present that in rebuttal.
You can provide that to the clerk at the conclusion of the argument, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will certainly do that. To simply finish this portion, it is our suggestion to the court that there's no way we could have protected ourselves against liability of this sort, okay, completely unintended and incidental to our conduct. Absent Ullico, commencing in December of 2008, standing at the site with a placard or sign saying, all ye who enter, take no comfort from the fact that we are funding layman's portion. Because there's a whole universe of folks who theoretically, because there's still activity at the site, because people are still getting paid, because the retail lenders all funded, okay, that they could have been misled by that.
But this is having trouble understanding the nature of this guarantee with Fountain Blue. Wasn't Fountain Blue already obligated to pay whatever these advances
were? Well, the Fountain Blue borrower on the retail side was obligated to pay whatever the lenders lent. What we did get was credit enhancements. We got guarantees, unsecured guarantees from third parties that to induce us to do that. And remember here that Mr. Dillon's clients were strangers to our transaction, we were strangers to his. The suggestion that we, being a lender in the retail side, should have started communicating with the lenders in the main credit facility and saying, hey, Lehman stopped funding, we're covering, perhaps you ought to reconsider your position about funding. You know, it doesn't take much imagination. We're all commercial lawyers sitting here on both sides of this table to figure out that Ullico would be before Judge Denton on a different case.
Can you clear something up for me? He cited, opposing counsel cited section 3.323 of the funding agreement as a basis for your misrepresentation or
yes. I believe that provision, okay, requires that all of the retail lenders have funded, okay, and that certification is made to Bank of America, okay, the disbursing agent, okay, and all of the retail lenders funded. There is no allegation in the complaint, nor could they be, that until the spring of 09, many months later, at a time that's not encompassed within the fraud allegations of the complaint, the retail lenders all funded.
So there's nothing wrong with you funding for Lehman
no.
and notifying Bank of America to disperse funds. There's nothing to prevent
No, in fact, Bank of America had the credit agreement, had the retail credit agreement, knew the provisions in the credit agreement. In fact, that's actually one of the reasons, one of many reasons, that Mr. Dillman's clients were unhappy with Bank of America. In fact, in paragraph 136, they say, unfortunately, Bank of America failed to take steps required of it as administrative and disbursing agent. So they clearly thought Bank of America should have done more. That's not our conclusion. We're not in that, we don't have a dog in that fight between Mr. Dillman's clients and Bank of America. They litigated that case in Florida, lost it, okay? But clearly Bank of America understood, because they were the disbursing agent for the retail loan too. They understood what the rights were.
But it appears as though the court's decision on Bank of America in Florida formed the basis for the dismissal of the Brigade's complaint here. Could you address that argument?
Yes. Let me talk about Judge Denton's opinion.
Provide a basis for dismissal of this complaint.
Yeah. I do acknowledge
the arguments being made in this case against you are different than the arguments being made by Brigade against B of A in Florida.
I acknowledge that, Your Honor. Thank you.
So how does judicial estoppel form a basis for dismissing the complaint in Nevada?
Well, Judge Denton's opinion, which was a ruling on very many, many motions for dismissal filed at the time, there's a paragraph relating to Ullico. And while his opinion is brief, in our view, it is not cryptic. It is quite clear what he said. Okay? The transcript of the oral argument before Judge Denton, okay, had nothing to do, okay, by and large, with the Bank of America case. It had to do with existing garden variety Nevada law relating to whether silence could be the basis for a fraud or negligent misrepresentation case where there was no duty because there was no relationship between the parties. Okay? That's what was argued before Judge Denton. Okay? He concludes, the court is persuaded by his motion, period. We think that's a reference to what was argued in front of him. He then goes on to say, moreover, comma, this whole issue about the Florida case, in our view, was not critical to his decision. He says, although defendant's judicial estoppel contention takes the court beyond the face of the complaint, and although the court does not find the doctrine to be fully applicable, okay, he clearly took judicial notice of a fact pled by them in the Bank of America complaint. He does not dismiss this case, Your Honor, respectfully. And, you know, I don't think we're reading tea leaves here. I think this is a fair reading of the paragraph. He does not dismiss this case on the basis of judicial estoppel. In fact, he specifically finds it inapplicable to this situation. Okay? What he clearly did not want to be in a position, we believe, Your Honor, was to be middled by some kind of pleading in here in Clark County that was inconsistent with what the plaintiff was doing in Florida. Okay? So he took judicial notice, we respectfully suggest to the court, okay, of a pleading and some facts pled in the pleading. He did not decide this case based on judicial estoppel, in our view. Your Honor, we very briefly just want to talk about what Mr. Dillon did.
Why was it necessary for him to take judicial notice of the statement?
Candidly, I do not think it was necessary. Okay, I think that he found it very compelling, though, Your Honor, that as in paragraph...
Can I finish my question?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why was it necessary for the judge to take judicial notice of the statement on page 809 of the record in his order, the quotes, Bank of America failed to take steps required of it to ensure that funding and disbursements did not continue in the face of Lehman's breaches and default. The quote, Freeman advised B of A that FBR had funded Lehman's position or portion. What was important about taking judicial notice of those statements if, as you argue, the court concluded that it was persuaded by the content of your motion?
I don't think it was necessary, and I think respectfully what he was doing was harmonizing, not distinguishing, harmonizing those allegations with the two paragraphs of the complaint in front of him. Okay? The sentence you read is from his opinion relating to what Mr. Freeman told B of A. That's paragraph 137 of Mr. Dillman's complaint in this matter. Okay? And in the paragraph before, 136, they say, unfortunately, Bank of America failed to take steps required of it in connection with the administration of the loan. All we believe that the lower court was doing was making clear that the allegations that we seized upon here in this complaint were consistent with positions the plaintiff was taking in other litigation. And so I don't think it was critical or necessary, okay, that he cite that as support. We think there were independent grounds that he relied upon and did not completely articulate.
Well, my question was, did he do this because he was trying to reconcile statements in the McRae Declaration that were different than were contained in these two paragraphs of the complaint?
I do not believe so, Your Honor, no. I'm familiar with the McRae Declaration. I do not believe there's anything in there inconsistent with we've pointed out to the judge, anything that would have impeached Mr. Dillman's allegations in these two paragraphs such that we would have needed extraneous support by going to the Florida complaint in order to support it. So I do not respectfully think that Judge Denton needed or required. It was obviously in play. We showed it to him. It was discussed by both counsel. Okay? But it was not, we don't believe it was critical to his finding in any way, Your Honor.
Okay. Do my colleagues have any questions for Mr. Harvey? All right. Thank you, Mr. Harvey.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Mr. Harvey caught me. Lehman went bankrupt September 2008. I misspoke. He was incorrect, however, and I went outside of the pleadings. I should not have done that. I thought it was in our pleadings. I checked. It's not. In terms of the Lehman's payments or not, I will represent to the court that if we were to amend, and I believe it is undisputed, I've lived with these facts for a long time, Lehman funded in October and November. It did not fund in September. The FBR, the developer, funded for it. Those were the allegations in September that we alleged against B of A that we lost. But one way or the other, it was in December, after 2 months of funding by Lehman, that Ullico stepped in. Went outside of the record, but since counsel made a representation to the contrary, I wanted to clear that up. Someday, Mr. Harvey said, someday we were out on a limb. Someday we were going to get reimbursed, perhaps. They got reimbursed monthly. And if need be, we can certainly amend the complaint to allege that. I don't think we need to. That's just a fact issue that goes into the background. Justice Harris, you asked a question about the covering of shortfalls. There's a reason why the retail lenders have to pay the amounts. And if you look at 3.3.23, it doesn't simply say that any old retail lender can pay. What it says is the retail lenders shall make any advances required of them. Retail lenders required of them pursuant to the advance request. And why was this? Why was it not okay for somebody to, like FBR, to step in here? Well, I think the court pretty much hit it on the head. Those folks, FBR, Fountain Blue Resort, excuse me, Mr. Sofer, the contractor, they were already all in on this. They had performance guarantees. They had completion guarantees. They had hundreds of millions of dollars of monies that were backing this project. If they're now shoveling money in to pay Lehman, all that's doing is taking credit, is taking capital that they've already committed to this project, and it's siphoning it through another way of covering up the default of another lender. And that's the real overarching structural problem of this setup. Mr. Harvey said, "Well, what were they supposed to do? Were they when Ullico, or excuse me, when Sofer came to them, was Ullico supposed to say, okay, just a minute, get on the phone and call up the lenders and say, look, you got to know this, okay? Before you fund anymore, you got to understand." No, of course not. But once you step into the breach, once you start talking, which certainly signing checks for millions of dollars is talking, you've got a duty to talk truthfully and fully. And that's where their duty came in. That's where the misrepresentation came in.
Do you disagree that Ullico or any other co-lender in the retail facility could advance the shortfall created by Lehman?
Contractually? I believe it's not part of the pleadings. It wasn't actually set forth in their brief. I didn't see it. I believe that there is documentation in the retail facility that addresses when one retail lender can step in to take on the commitments of another. That wasn't done here, but it wouldn't have anything to do with
it. Actually, pragmatically, it was.
Well, it wouldn't have anything to do because it wasn't Ullico that was stepping in here. As a practical matter, it wasn't. Ullico might have, if they wanted to put their money on the line and step in, might have had some ability under the retail agreements, again, not part of my pleadings, to do that. But that didn't mean that they could use that fortuity as a sort of cover to the funneling of money. When I go into the bank to get a loan on my house, and I know that the bank's going to require that I have X amount of liquid assets, and I go out to a loan shark and I borrow those assets and I stick them into an account over here, and so when the bank says, can you show me liquid assets in an account, and I point to that account, I am misrepresenting to that bank what just happened, which is those are not my liquid assets. Those are burdened by a loan, and any bank that knows that fact isn't going to, whether they lend to me or not, they're not going to consider that account as any sort of basis for making that loan. And that's really what happened here. Ullico stuck money out there that wasn't their money and said it was. And people relied upon that. And whether they were entitled to do that if it was their money has little to do with whether they were entitled to do that if it wasn't their money.
Okay. Any questions by my colleagues? All right. And you'll provide that paragraph site, counsel?
Yes, I can see it for the record now.
All right.
Section 5.01, paren, small d, and paren, of the retail lending agreement.
Section 5.01.
Paren, small d, and paren.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Dillman, do you wish to be heard on this point, that site, or do you wish to have an opportunity to comment regarding?
I don't, Your Honor. If the retail agreement is what it is, I'm not disputing.
And it's in the record, right?
The retail agreement is. I don't recall them having cited that provision, and I'm not certainly. I missed Lehman's bankruptcy filing, so I might have missed that one. But no, I don't. I certainly don't dispute my colleague's statement.
Okay. Thank you very much. For the members of the Boy Scout troop, others who are listening to this argument, the case now stands submitted.